Today is Friday, August 20th, and you are listening to International Edition of the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Afo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Amnesty International accuses the Taliban of torture and killing.
These reports have increasingly emerged about these alleged revenge killings that the Taliban fighters have been carrying out.
Plus, UN says millions will run out of food this week in Tigray.
For the first time in 9 months of war, aid workers will this week run out of food for millions of people going hungry in Ethiopia's Tigray region.
Also, death toll from insurgent attack in Burkina Faso rises to 80. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. Amnesty International says the Taliban were responsible for the torture and killings of several members of Afghanistan's Hazara ethnic minority last month. The rights group said Friday that its researchers in Afghanistan spoke to witnesses in Ghazni province who recounted how the Taliban killed 9 men in the village of Mudrakat in early July. It said 6 of the men were shot and 3 were tortured to death. The rights group warned that many more killings may be occurring, but are so far unreported because the Taliban have cut cell phone services in many of the areas they've captured to prevent images from being published. Separately, the group Reporters Without Borders expressed alarm at the news that Taliban fighters have killed a family member of an Afghan journalist working for German broadcaster Deutsche Welle. For more, I spoke with VOA's Ayaz Gold in Islamabad.
These reports have increasingly emerged about these alleged revenge killings that the Taliban fighters have been carrying out. But we have approached repeatedly to Taliban officials, and what they are saying that instead of these organizations, these human rights groups putting out these statements, they should basically present or contact a complaint commission that the Taliban have established in Kabul, which is basically looking into these allegations and these grievances of the citizens in Kabul so that they can go after whoever is behind these killings, because the Taliban are repeatedly denying it. But it's very difficult at this stage to determine exactly who is telling the truth, because the Taliban are still trying to stabilize the situation in Kabul and other parts of Afghanistan. So, and we know that they have taken over, they have taken control of the country and Kabul, but they still need to settle down to look into these things. But as we know that Taliban, it's an insurgent group. There are fighters who may be conducting these kind of executions and killing these minority people. But this is what the Taliban are claiming, that they need to be informed about any such incident directly by the affectees rather than putting out these statements.
Is the Taliban really in control of its fighters, or there might be some rogue elements within the Taliban ranks that are carrying out these revenge killings?
That could be very much true, that there are rogue elements in the ranks of the Taliban, because we know that it's like a group of tribesmen, fighters, former jihadist organizations that have been fighting under the umbrella of the Taliban. And there are also militant groups that have taken refuge in Afghanistan but have enemies in neighboring countries, and they are also a problem that the Taliban will have to deal in order to keep the neighboring countries happy. So you cannot rule out that maybe these foreigners in the Taliban rank could be carrying out these kind of attacks within Taliban's own fighters, you know, who come from specific community, and maybe in their own community they had some rivals that they want to settle the score with. So you cannot rule out all these possibilities. And that is why it is really a daunting task for the Taliban to establish a complete control, stability and peace, to convince the global community that they are the right rulers and legitimate rulers of the country, and that they are there to protect the rights of these strife-torn, conflict-hit Afghans who have really suffered over the last 20 years, and they really need some kind of peace and stability, but not at the cost of their human rights, like their rights to freedom of expression, their right to perform their religious rituals in the country, and to seek education, particularly for women. So all these things together could be something that the Taliban will have to find quite challenging in the coming days. But in the meantime, because of the volatility in the situation, these incidents we are coming across, like there are protests against the Taliban rule in parts of the country, and then these alleged revenge killings that have been going on in parts of the country, including in some areas in Kabul, the capital. So it's quite a complex situation as of this moment to really find out how things will unfold in the days to come.
That's VOA's Ayaz Goh speaking with me from Islamabad. Popular opposition to the Taliban has now spread to several Afghan cities, although there are reports of people being killed by either militant gunfire or stampedes caused by it. Matthew Larotonda of Reuters reports.
Protests against the Taliban have now spread to more Afghan cities, and several more people have been killed at the rallies, according to witnesses, by either the militants firing their weapons or the panic and stampedes caused by it. This video was filmed by Reuters near one of the protests in the capital, Kabul. A witness in the area said that it appeared to be the Taliban firing their weapons into the air. Although on Wednesday, media reported that Taliban fighters fired directly into a crowd of other protesters in the city of Jalalabad, killing three people. And on Thursday, a witness at a protest in the city of Assadabad said more people were killed there, although it wasn't clear if they were killed by gunfire, a stampede, or both. A Taliban spokesperson was not immediately available for comment. August 19th is the day that Afghanistan typically celebrates its Independence Day, when it gained independence from British rule in 1919. Some of the gatherings have been small in size, but it underlines the challenge facing the Taliban to govern the country and project a more moderate image. Meanwhile, dramatic new images have been pouring in from Kabul's airport as U.S. and allied forces struggle to keep the massive crowds inside and outside under control. A little girl here being lifted over the perimeter fence by American troops filmed on Tuesday. On Wednesday, tear gas as the soldiers try to keep the crowds back. Thousands of people are here. As of Thursday, about 8,000 Afghans and foreigners have been evacuated, according to a Western official. The U.S. alone says it's trying to get out 22,000 at-risk Afghans.
That's Matthew Larotonda of Reuters. President Joe Biden remains defiant amid a political storm triggered by the swift Taliban takeover of Afghanistan and the chaotic end of America's longest war. Whether he can survive the crisis depends on many factors, including the safe evacuation of Americans. White House correspondent Patsy Widas-Kuwara has more.
Chaos continues outside Kabul's airport Thursday as thousands try to flee the country after the Taliban takeover last week. Parents passing their children to American soldiers as they try to climb over. President Joe Biden remains defiant. The withdrawal could not have been carried out more effectively, he said, in an exclusive interview with ABC News' George Stephanopoulos.
To go back in hindsight and look, but the idea that somehow there's a way to have gotten out without chaos ensuing, I don't know how that happens.
Biden said no one could have foreseen the swift Taliban takeover, a possibility he has repeatedly dismissed since announcing the drawdown in April.
Somehow the 300,000 troops we had trained and equipped was going to just collapse. They were going to give up. I don't think anybody anticipated that.
Still, the failure to evacuate Americans and Afghan partners in an orderly manner and the rapid collapse of the American-backed Afghan military have raised doubts about the calculations behind Biden's foreign policy. Michael O'Hanlon is a senior foreign policy fellow at the liberal-leaning Brookings Institution.
Yes, it was a failure of leadership. It was mostly a failure of proper thought and planning.
In just a few days, Biden's approval rating dropped by 7 percentage points to its lowest level in his presidency, according to a Reuters Ipsos poll. American public support for ending the war has also tumbled. 49% of voters now back the exit, down 20 points since April, according to a Morning Consult Politico poll. U.S. lawmakers vowed to investigate the rapid Taliban victory and chaotic withdrawal. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
What we have seen is an unmitigated disaster, a stain on the reputation of the United States of America.
But some analysts say the damage can be repaired and the decision to exit is still the right one. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
As the U.S. leaves a vacuum in Afghanistan, people worldwide are watching China's response. The two countries share a border and have on and off ties that predate the September 11 terrorist attacks in the U.S. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the details on the risks and benefits of the China-Afghan relationship.
Long before the balance of power in Afghanistan changed swiftly, China had been paving the road for a relationship with the Taliban. On July 28th, China's foreign minister met with high-level Taliban officials in the Chinese city of Tianjin.
But actually, in the week before that, President Xi had actually called and spoken to President Ghani and impressed his continued support for the Afghan government. So China's essentially been hedging.
Some Central Asia analysts believe China was a factor in the speed of the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan.
The Afghan security forces recognized that the Taliban had the support of China, had the support of Russia, Pakistan, and Iran. Most of the major countries in the region, probably with the exception of India. So morale was devastated.
Some analysts say China's interests in Afghanistan include its mineral deposits and location relative to China's Belt and Road Initiative, which aims to expand China's political and economic influence to Europe through investment in infrastructure projects. While the vacuum left by the U.S. in Afghanistan could be an opportunity for China, analysts expect Beijing to be cautious.
China still sees Afghanistan through this sort of obsessive graveyard of empires prism. They don't want to get sucked in. They think it's a risk. They think it's a trap.
China's biggest concern is security.
First of all, ensuring that there isn't a spillover of some of the security threats in Afghanistan to the wider neighborhood, where China has much more substantial economic, political, and strategic interests. Certainly the case for Central Asia, and particularly, I think, in the case of Pakistan.
With Chinese investments in transportation routes through Pakistan, the two countries share a need for stability.
First, that Afghan soil should not be used against China. It shares a 50 miles long border with Afghanistan.
Politically, China has used the situation in Afghanistan to criticize the U.S.
We've seen the U.S. military leave an awful mess of unrest, division, families ruined and orphaned.
While Afghanistan may be a public relations win for China, analysts say the reality is different. Analysts agree China will take on a watch and wait stance as the situation in Afghanistan unfolds. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Washington.
The head of the United Nations Humanitarian Agency says aid workers will run out of food this week for millions in need in Ethiopia's conflict-ravaged Tigray region. Emma McCarthy of Reuters has more.
For the first time in 9 months of war, aid workers will this week run out of food for millions of people going hungry in Ethiopia's Tigray region. That's according to Samantha Power, head of the United States humanitarian agency USAID. In a statement late on Thursday, Power said USAID, its partners and other humanitarian organizations had depleted their stores of food warehoused in Tigray. She added that people in Tigray are starving, with 900,000 in famine conditions and more than 5 million in desperate need of humanitarian assistance. Earlier on Thursday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres pushed for an immediate ceasefire in Tigray.
Humanitarian conditions are hellish.
Where the federal military is fighting forces aligned with the Tigray People's Liberation Front.
And we have heard firsthand accounts of women who have been subjected to unspeakable violence. And the spread of the conflict has ensnared even more people in its horror. It is time for all parties to recognize that there is no military solution. And it's vital to preserve the unity and stability of Ethiopia, which is critical to the region and beyond.
The conflict has killed thousands and sparked a humanitarian crisis in one of the world's poorest regions. In recent weeks, it has spread to the neighboring Afar and Amhara provinces, displacing around 250,000 people and raising concerns over wider destabilization of Africa's second most populous country.
The death toll from an attack on civilians and the military in northern Burkina Faso has risen to 80 people, the government said in a statement on Thursday. Jason Albano of Reuters reports.
The death toll in an attack on civilians and military personnel in northern Burkina Faso has climbed to at least 80. That's according to the country's regional Sahel government on Thursday. The attack happened on Wednesday when Islamist militants raided a convoy being escorted by military police. Security forces said at least 80 militants were also killed. Wednesday's attack is the latest in a series of attacks in the Sahel across West Africa this month. The Sahel, an arid strip of land bordering the south edge of the Sahara Desert, has been made ungovernable by armed Islamists. Despite the presence of thousands of UN, regional, and Western troops, violence there has only intensified in recent years. Thousands of civilians have been killed and millions more displaced since 2018.
This is the Voice of America. China is tightening control over data gathered by companies about the public under a law approved by a ceremonial legislature. The data protection law expands the ruling Communist Party's crackdown on internet industries. It follows anti-monopoly and other enforcement actions against companies, including e-commerce giant Alibaba and games and social media operator Tencent, that caused their share prices to plunge. A bankruptcy judge has approved a proposal by the Boy Scouts of America to set up an $850 million fund to compensate tens of thousands of men who said they were sexually abused as youngsters by scout leaders. But the judge on Thursday also rejected two key provisions of the deal, potentially jeopardizing the agreement the organization has been hoping to use as a springboard to emerge from bankruptcy later this year. It was not immediately clear how Thursday's ruling will affect the future of the bankruptcy case for the Texas-based organization. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. World Health Organization officials warned that decisions by rich countries to provide COVID-19 booster shots to their vaccinated populations will set back efforts to contain the spread of the deadly disease in Africa. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United States, France, and Germany are among a growing number of wealthy countries planning to offer COVID-19 booster shots to their populations. This at a time when the world's poorer nations are struggling to get even one jab of these life-saving vaccines into their people's arms. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, warns that moves by some countries to introduce booster shots threaten Africa's ability to extricate itself from this crushing disease. She says richer countries that are hoarding vaccines are making a mockery of vaccine equity.
High-income countries have already, on average, administered more than 103 doses per 100 people, whereas in Africa, that number stands at 6. Failure to vaccinate the most at-risk groups in all countries will result in needless deaths. It will also contribute to conditions where the virus will very likely mutate further and could ultimately delay the global recovery from this pandemic.
WHO reports there are more than 7.3 million cases of coronavirus infections on the African continent, including 184,000 deaths. The UN Health Agency is calling for a two-month moratorium on booster shots so countries can beef up their vaccine supplies. Moeti says some progress is being made in this regard. She notes the COVAX facility has delivered nearly 10 million vaccine doses to Africa so far this month. That, she says, is 9 times what was delivered in the same period in July.
Vaccine coverage, unfortunately, remains low, with only 2% of Africans being fully vaccinated against COVID-19. We are hopeful that COVAX shipments will keep ramping up to reach 20% of Africa's population by the end of this year. And coupled with deliveries from the African Union and bilateral deals, WHO's hope for target of vaccinating 30% of people by the end of the year is still within our reach.
West Africa has recorded the highest number of COVID-19 deaths since the pandemic began. WHO reports a 193% increase in fatalities over the past 4 weeks. This is happening at a time when several West African countries are grappling with outbreaks of other diseases, including cholera, Ebola, and Marburg virus disease. Moeti says fighting multiple outbreaks is a complex challenge. She notes that West Africa health systems are more fragile than those in other subregions. She says they are under great strain due to the surge of COVID-19 cases. She's appealing for major investments by governments and donors to ensure outbreaks are continuously prevented, detected, and quickly contained. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Saturday is International Day of Remembrance and Tribute to the Victims of Terrorism, a day that is unfortunately relevant in Burkina Faso, which is engaged in fighting Islamist militants. A Burkinabe nonprofit group, Go Paga, is helping widows and orphans grappling with the loss of husbands and fathers to rebuild their lives. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
Some 1.3 million people have been displaced in Burkina Faso's conflict since it began in 2015, and more than 6,000 killed, according to the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. Burkinabe military personnel are among the dead, killed fighting terror groups linked to the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. Loretta Ilbudo is the widow of a soldier killed in that fight. She says it was on December 24, 2019. She and her family were preparing for Christmas. Her husband's uncles arrived in the morning, but she wasn't informed of his death until that evening. She said she suspected something, but wasn't told anything to begin with. Her husband died during a terrorist attack on the town of Arbinda. The couple had a daughter who was just a few months old at the time. Her husband was a nice person, she says, a bit shy and very serious about his work. He spent a lot of time with his family. They used to go on outings on his days off. A non-profit called Go Paga is helping widows like Ilbudu. Its pilot project, launched in February, provides them with support so they can make a living. Fadima Kambu is the founder of Go Paga. She says the program is about teaching the women to fish, not giving them the fish. It's about empowering themselves and their children afterwards. The aim is for Burkina Faso to have a system of care that supports what the state already provides for these widows, Kambu says. Terrorism victims like Ilbudo face complex issues, says Finyila Nialoane, United Nations Special Rapporteur for Protecting the Human Rights of Terrorism Victims.
So we get a lot of good wishes on victims of terrorism, and we get a lot of expressions of great sorrow for their sorrow. But in many ways, and I think we'll speak directly about widows, the reality is that victims of terrorism, particularly women who've been victims, need concrete and practical supports.
Today, Ilbudo is an intern at an insurance company. She hopes to be fully employed so she can support her daughter. Now, she says she feels ready to move forward, and she says she wishes other women had this chance. Beginning in September, Go Paga plans to roll out its program to support all military widows in the country. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
The Peace Corps is beginning the process of returning its volunteers to countries across the globe, but how quickly that happened will depend on the pandemic. The U.S. government program is marking its 60th anniversary this year, but in March 2020, more than 7,000 volunteers were recalled from 62 countries. New volunteers have since been redeployed. Some returned to host countries at their own costs or refused to leave in the first place. The program hopes to have volunteers in place late this year or early next year. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great weekend.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel,
host of Press Conference USA. Coming up, a conversation with Tunisia expert Amy Hawthorne about the future of that country's experiment with democracy. The only country to have thrown off the yoke of authoritarianism is showing signs of backsliding. What precipitated the crisis in Tunisia, and what are its prospects for holding on to its hard-won democratic gains? That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.